What's up, little psychos? I'm Investigator Slater, host of the Psychopedia podcast. Psychopedia is a true crime podcast delivering raw, real, and absolutely gripping episodes every single week. I dig deep to uncover fascinating details of heinous true crime cases while exploring criminology and psychology theories. I take you into the absolute darkest corners of the human psyche, my favorite territory, and present cases like you've never heard them before. Follow and listen to Psychopedia everywhere you get your podcasts.
Kale and Company weekday mornings 6 till 10.
I don't know why. I woke up, you know, I don't know if I have a cold,
like hay fever or like allergies.
I can breathe now, though. I'm breathing.
Okay, good.
It's good. Good. This hour's bra sponsored by my good friend Amazon Prime. If you love deals, this is going to be a fantastic deal. Prime Day is now 4 days long. That's 4 days of incredible deals. Every single category you can think of. Save big on every single thing that you're into. It's Prime Day, July 8th through the 11th. 4 Prime Days. I can't take it.
Mm. The consumerism.
Too many.
Yes.
Let it consume you. Yes.
The big, beautiful bill is still being debated and amended, and the Votorama has been going on.
Yeah.
Red?
I said, and red.
Yeah, I think they read it. I don't know if they understood it all, but they're working on it. Still no deal yet, but it will happen soon enough. Yesterday, the Department of Justice announced the biggest healthcare fraud bust in the history of healthcare fraud. And when you hear this stuff, I'm blown away that the massive amount of fraud, it's like $14.6 billion. That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
And I'm so tired of hearing people say that Trump is cutting Medicaid and he's going to 7 million Americans or whatever the number of the quote, they're going to lose their Medicaid. They're going to, and they need it. And Trump is a big meanie. These are people that will lose their ability to defraud taxpayers any further. That they're going to lose their Medicaid, all right, but they're going to lose it because they shouldn't be getting it.
Yeah, they shouldn't really be eligible for it.
Right.
That's what you're saying, right? Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. 324 defendants, listen to this, including 96 doctors and nurse practitioners and pharmacists, other licensed medical professionals in 50 federal districts, along with 12 state attorneys general across the United States, $14.6 billion, with a B, dollars. And it's... they have seized $245 million in cash, like green cash money. Luxury vehicles. They always get a luxury vehicle, don't they? You know, when you start frauding people, like all of the COVID fraud, you know, the COVID.
Yes, the PPP loans where people lost their businesses and then suddenly they popped out a Lamborghini in Miami. And you're like, hold on a second.
Like the guy that had a moving company with his brother and they had one truck.
Yes.
Then he shows up the next day and he's in a blue Lamborghini. listen to this. And there are a lot of American healthcare companies that were defrauded.
Sure.
But when you really pay attention to this, the Centers for Medicaid and Medicare announced that they've stopped a lot of fraud. $4 billion was about to be paid out in fraud from Medicare and Medicaid. That was stopped. It was coordinated by the Healthcare Fraud Unit. I didn't even know we had that. And I don't know why every single year we're not hearing announcements of fraud busts. Like, should we be doing this around the clock, 24/7?
Yeah, or just making it more public. Like, you will be publicly shamed if you try to defraud the American public. Especially if you said how many doctors and physicians and pharmacists, people who typically make decent money, should not be on using Medicaid. So,
there's 29 defendants that are charged with transnational, but they're. For example, the organization used a network of foreign straw owners, like a straw buyer.
Mm-hmm.
Individuals that were sent to the U.S. from abroad, acting at the direction of others, using encrypted messaging and assumed identities from overseas, strategically bought dozens of Medicaid supply companies, right?
Yeah.
And then across the United States, then immediately and rapidly started to submit fraudulent healthcare claims to Medicare for like urinary catheters, other medical equipment. to the tune of $10.6 billion.
Shannon, I got Matthew Gagliotti. He's the head of the criminal division of the U.S. Department of Justice, explaining why this is so bad.
Let's hear it.
Emphasizing.
First, let me be clear about what these health care fraud schemes mean for every hardworking American family. These criminals didn't just steal someone else's money. They stole from you. Every fraudulent claim, every fake billing, every kickback scheme represents money taken directly from the pockets of American taxpayers who fund these essential programs through their hard work and sacrifice. And when criminals defraud these programs, they're not just committing theft. They're driving up our national deficit and threatening the long-term viability of health care for seniors, disabled Americans, and our most vulnerable citizens.
I mean, it's an astounding amount of money. And what's more disturbing is there are licensed professionals, medical professionals here.
Right,
that have taken
the system.
Yeah, I don't know if the fraud is covered under the Hippocratic Oath. Maybe not.
Clearly not.
You're supposed to do no harm, but it doesn't say you're not supposed to rob anybody. So, 44 licensed medical professionals, 58 cases in connection with illegal diversion of 15 million pills, prescription opioids, other controlled substances. in Nevada, seven defendants, including five medical professionals, were connected to $1.1 billion in fraud to Medicare.
Yeah.
I mean, it goes on and on and on. The list is incredible. But this is the Medicaid reform that is in the Big Beautiful Bill. This is what Democrats and liberals said was harming poor people that need Medicaid. Trump is cutting Medicaid. These poor people won't get it anymore. This is what they're cutting. This is fraud.
Right.
I just don't understand how people can't see that. Or maybe it's just a political response to cutting Medicaid.
Like we talked about yesterday, it doesn't matter if Trump cures cancer, they'll find a problem with it. You know what I mean? Like, he was racist about it or something.
Trump will cure cancer, and then all of those unemployed chemotherapy clinic people are going to suffer.
yeah. He'll find that one. They'll find that one person that got caught up when they shouldn't have got caught up. Like the Kilmar Omar, or what was his name, Garcia thing.
Abrego,
they're really trying to tout that. He's just a dad. It's like, no, dude.
He's
an MS-13 member that was beating his wife. So they will just die on any hill just to try to make Trump look bad.
Right. I mean, we should be. I made it a point last night to, as I'm consuming my news products, to flip around to legacy media to catch their evening news to see if they would report on this. And I didn't see squat. This would be a big deal. $14.6 billion. And I don't know what that equals to on an annual basis.
Sure.
But it's a massive amount of fraud that is, you were talking about killing Medicaid. That was killing Medicaid. This fraud is killing Medicaid. And Trump is, you know, getting rid of it. I think it's
right. But they'll never pitch it like that, of course.
Right. You know.
Yeah, they'll just pitch it that, like you said, he hates poor people and he doesn't want them to have coverage or whatever sort of bogus
no
charges
for
they're
you.
Throwing his way. Yeah, exactly.
It is. I think it's something that should be celebrated. I know that you know, Medicaid is very important and. And I don't know what this comes out to on a annualized basis. It could be, you know, $50-100 billion annually. But the good news is we caught it. And then you have to ask yourself, why didn't we take a look at it before?
Right.
Do people just assume that if it's a government program, that everything's A-okay, no one's defrauding, it's the government. You can't defraud the government. But we've seen time and time again in the last 5 years, I mean, what was the total of the COVID, like $80 billion in fraudulent aid paid
wild
out?
Like that. Well, it opens Pandora's box when you start exploring these sorts of things. So even though people know it's wrong, they know, like, I might be on the chopping block next. All these bureaucrats want government to get bigger and bigger and bigger because that's how they make their monies. So.
Right. But as it gets bigger and bigger, the fraud number goes up. You know,
absolutely.
The more money we spend, and the more aid, Medicaid, USAID, all of these things, the more there is fraud. And I don't know. I've never heard in my adult life of the DOJ announcing a bust of Medicaid fraud to any extent whatsoever, especially not $14.6 billion.
Right. Well, things are changing these days, Shannon, and hopefully for the better. Hopefully it sets a precedent in the future where people can't get away with this sort of thing.
True. Maybe it's because people have no pride in being an American.
That's highly likely. I feel like a lot of Americans are self-hating Americans.
In 2001, Republicans, 90% of Republicans claimed that they were proud to be American. Extremely proud, or very proud.
Sorry, when was this, you said?
2001.
2001, okay.
Uh-huh. And then 90% of Republicans were proud to be Americans. 87% of Democrats were proud to be American. And 84% of independents were proud to be Americans in 2001.
Right.
Fast forward to today. The Republican number, which was at 90%, is now at 92%.
Ooh.
92% proud to be Americans. Independents are at 53%. That's quite a decline. But dear Democrats find themselves only 36% of Democrats are proud to be an American.
That shakes out. That's exactly what I would expect. I honestly am surprised the number's not lower. But
here's the thing, though. The way Democrats feel about the country is directly correlated to if they have a guy in the office or not, if they control Congress or not, if they have the Senate or not. I'm sure they're more proud to be an American under Biden. As a matter of fact, under Biden, they got as high as 63%. But just because
Their guy was in office. But in 2001, Bush was in office. I mean, maybe this was like right after September 11th, right? I'm assuming. So everyone was banding together. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it stayed steady till about 2005. Then it starts to go haywire. but around 2014 or 15, 2014, Democrats started to slide and reached their lowest point in just this year, 36%.
Yeah. I mean, they're just kind of throwing like a hissy fit.
How can you not be proud to be an American or be proud to be wherever? If you're from Argentina, you ought to be proud to be an Argentinian. You know what I mean?
I disagree that it's a sign of what you're saying. I really think it's built upon the foundation of the Democratic Party being hating America. It's not that they don't have someone in office. It's they built this past 10 years that because Trump said, make America great again, you had Cuomo saying it was never that great. You have other Democrats trying to propose that America was never the nation that we want to believe that it was. So I think it's natural that you have this decline in America support.
Among Democrats, at least.
Among Democrats, yeah.
Like we were responsible for slavery so we should not be proud of our country anymore because of that happened, you know, so far
because of the history, right? Because like every other country was built in a perfectly pristine way,
right,
where there was no combat, no displacement of the native people,
no war, suffering.
No slavery. I mean, it's crazy. Even the word slave, people don't realize, is taken from the word Slav, and Slavs are white people because they were slaves. Everybody had slaves. I'm not saying it was good, but it's just the way that things were. I don't think that America is uniquely bad in that sense.
I think if you ask the average 10th grader today which country was responsible for slavery, they would just say the United States, and they wouldn't go any further.
Yeah. 96% of the Africans that were taken from Africa during the African slave trade were sent to Central and South America.
Right.
What? Only 4% reached North America.
I'm not saying it's good. It was never that great.
It was never that great. That's one of the reasons Cuomo didn't make it in the mayoral primary, I think, because he thought America's never been that great.
A socialist gets in. What?
Right. Yeah. You're right. Well, you're right. I guess the socialist hates America less than Cuomo, maybe?
Again,
I don't know about
that. It was never that great.
It was never that great. Get a ventilator. We got ventilators for everybody.
Remember the guy with the ventilator? He had to have 400,000 ventilators, and they never needed them all. And somewhere in New York, there's a warehouse that's stocked full of dusty ventilators, just littering the whole warehouse.
Yeah, I think after the fact, people realized that the ventilators were actually making the problem worse. Like, they were actually killing people.
He should have ran on that. Like, if you vote for me, I'll give you a ventilator. We got plenty of ventilators. Yeah. Ventilator for you. You get a ventilator. You get a ventilator.
Everybody. He's the Oprah of ventilators. Yeah.
That is incorrect and grossly uninformed.
Grossly uninformed. All right, when we return, you know, I hadn't talked much about this Idaho firefighter thing because it's such a bizarre story to me, and it's still.
It was developing yesterday, too. Like, we weren't really sure.
Right.
You know, and one was still identified.
And still, it's weird. Wes Rowley is who's been identified as the suspect who allegedly started a fire so that firefighters would come to put the fire out so he could kill firefighters.
Right.
What?
It seems odd, but that's what we're looking at. There's also other Idaho news. Brian Koberger, we'll get to his case.
Yes.
We'll do it when we return. By the way, 855-839-1210. Stick around. It's Kaley Company on 1210 WPHT.
Why does it feel like nobody really gives us the inside scoop? Join us on The Powers That Be, the podcast where insiders from Puck break down who has influence, how they use it, and what it actually means for you. New episodes every weekday. Listen to The Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Kale and Company podcast from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and on the free Odyssey app.
Now there's an active shooter zone. They're shot. BC3's down. BC1's down. Everybody's shot up here. Law enforcement, code 3 now up here.
The 911 call.
551, 10 or 14. Up here. Stop. Get out of the way. 10 or 14. Engine first 551. Do not come up here.
551 copies. Remain in staging.
Multiple firefighters attacked while this weak little man sat in a sniper position, started to pick them off in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, killing two, seriously injuring a third who have undergone some pretty heavy surgery. There's so many words I could use that I can't use to describe this man. I mean, this guy started a fire in order to entice
men. Yeah,
heroes. These guys aren't just average people. These guys are, I mean, firefighters are absolute stud heroes, men or women, doesn't matter. And for somehow, this guy needs to come in and assassinate them.
Yeah.
I don't understand the mentality.
He's sick.
Yeah.
Yeah, not making excuses, but that's who does stuff like this, a sick individual.
And yesterday, people would reach out to me and say, why aren't you talking about the Idaho firefighters? And I said, well, because, you know, A, it's pretty damn fishy at this point. You know, we didn't know the name of the person until yesterday.
Right,
You know, the governor responded to it with a statement. The International Association of Firefighters confirmed, SWAT team, went up to this area, to this mountain to locate a shooter. They found him dead. We don't know if it's obvious because they did exchange fire.
I don't know if it was self-inflicted or.
Right. I'm sure it was. I'm sure a guy like this, a weak little, man baby, thought he was going to be a hero, thought he was going to be a big man and killed a bunch of people for whatever, to satisfy whatever. And then he can't take the heat, and he has to off himself. Do you have the sheriff's?
It's the sheriff, Bob Norris. Here you go, Shannon.
Yeah.
So the
Phil, can you throw up that picture? I see you got it up there onto the youtube.com/at12nwphd.
He looks crazy.
Yeah, he does.
So the suspect that has been identified by our Cooney County Coroner's Office, Coroner Duke Johnson, there has been identified as Wes Val Rowley, date of birth of May 1st, 2005. As of right now, and this is all very, very preliminary, we've had a lot of resources at the crime scene. We've been working through the night, so many of these facts are subject to change. We believe that Rowley has prior residence in California, Arizona, and Idaho. We believe he was born in California. The Cooney County Sheriff's Office and Coeur d'Alene Police Department, we've had 5 interactions with Rowley.
Uh-huh.
And of those five interactions, we've had three. Coeur d'Alene police had two. They're very, very minor in nature. They had to do with more trespassing. He was trespassing at a location. He was asked to leave, and he cooperated.
I'm going to stop right there for you.
He doesn't sound like, thank you. It doesn't sound like, too many times we hear of a shooting, school shooting, this shooting, mass shooting. And then we hear later, well, this person was known to the FBI. This person was known to the police department.
They made previous threats. Yeah.
Right. Or they've interacted with him, the suspect, because of whatever reason. They always seem to be on the radar of law enforcement, but they can never stop it. You know what I mean?
Sure.
It's pretty sad. Whenever we lose a first responder to a murder or to some kind of attack like this, it kind of dents everyone's faith, I think, in
because it's a senseless loss.
Right.
I don't know if you caught this, Shannon, but it may have coincided on an anniversary of a fire that happened in terms of destroying a property of like the Aryan Brotherhood. Did you see something about that?
I have. The Coeur d'Alene. Have you heard this, Dan? Coeur d'Alene is like a hot spot of skinhead white supremacy.
It? Okay. Yeah. Coeur d'Alene. Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. What'd you say?
Yeah. 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 I don't know. I was like French, so I was like Coeur d'Alene. Like.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm Donnie.
Yes. Who knew? Yeah. Who knew that Idaho had a hotbed of white supremacy? I've heard that too. I don't know. Maybe that's why. They were kind of hinky about it. We don't know the race of the firefighters that were killed. We don't know, you know, I hate to write it off to that, but you've got to consider, it, right? I mean, there's no other way.
Yeah. Yeah. When things like this happen, people are always trying to find an explanation. I always find it creepiest when you really can't. So for example, with Jeffrey Dahmer, he had like a pretty normal upbringing. They're like, oh, his mom had depression. She was an alcoholic. I'm like, that's minor stuff. You know, because people want to hear about like, oh, they had this horrific upbringing where they were like treated as a child slave. So they can kind of explain it away versus when there's really no reason why this person should have turned out the way they did. And then you think, damn, like, that could be anybody. Anybody could turn out like this. That's when it's the scariest for me.
It's when something like this happens. And they identify the shooter, the killer, the suspect, whatever it is.
Yeah.
They always immediately go back to find out what happened in his childhood. What made
them? Of course.
Look, I had a rough childhood. I'm not a murderer. I didn't set out to pick off first responders in a tree somewhere. It's just, you know, it's hard to understand. But prayers for the firefighters' families
and their family. Families.
Speaking of Idaho, Brian Koberger. Remember Brian Koberger?
Yes.
Pled guilty to all the counts, four counts of first degree murder, one count of burglary. Back in 2022, the roommates there, Kaylee, Madison, Zanna, and someone's boyfriend, Ethan.
Right.
Mm-hmm. He was going to get the death sentence, so the death penalty that was on the table. But they got a deal. His attorneys asked the prosecutors for a deal. Oh, give us an offer. Offer us something so we can keep Brian Koberger alive. And they did. They gave him the maximum penalty of 10 years each on the four counts, four consecutive life sentences and the maximum penalty of 10 years for the burglary. So I don't know if people think that's better than or for him. Be quite honest with you. Facing like the rest of your life in a prison cell, or just going away, you know, being put to death, seems like a quick way out, in my opinion. You don't, you're going to suffer. It's not going to be a very pleasurable life for the rest of this guy's relatively young. He's going to be in prison for some.
Yeah, you know what I mean? I believe one of the victim's sisters wrote made a statement about it, and she was basically just saying, like, look, this guy at least is going to be able to experience moments of joy and create relationships, and he'll be in prison forever, but, like, our family members are silenced forever, and we just feel like he needs to be held accountable. Go ahead.
I had some of the 911 call there. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't interrupt you there.
Yeah.
Here you go.
No, you're fine.
911 location of your emergency.
Hi, something is happening. Something's happening in our house. We don't know what.
What is the address of the emergency?
1122.
Yeah. address?
Oh, Kings Road.
Okay. And is that a house or an apartment?
It's a house.
Can you repeat the address to make sure that I have it right?
I'll talk to you guys. We live at the lights, so we're next to them.
I need someone to repeat the address for verification.
The address, 1122 King Road.
I mean, remember this case that they had tracked this guy,
I
guess, by his cell phone.
Yeah.
Right, but they had tracked his whereabouts in Idaho, and although there was evidence there, the only thing that nailed him was the knife, the sheath of the knife that he used, and it had his DNA on it, and he left it behind.
Yeah. How long was he on the run for? At least like 4 weeks or something like that. It was.
Yeah, I don't really recall, but yeah, it was some time.
And the nation really was gripped by like, where is this guy?
Right.
How did this happen? Yeah.
Has anyone ever said what the motive was? Other than just to kill people?
Was it like a sexual thing? Like he wanted to date one of the girls or something and they dismissed him? Or I don't know. I don't remember.
You know, if you want to avoid a trial, avoid the expense, that's one thing. But I would have said, no, we're not going to give you a deal. We're going to put your client to death. So you guys can.
He's not waking up.
That's awful. Terrible.
Was that one of the ones that survived? I know they had a bunch of roommates. Was that one of
like
the ones that?
Five or six, I think, were there, and only four were murdered. It's just
that's crazy.
Terrible story. I would rather the guy be put to death. Women return. Who counts in the census? Should illegal aliens count in the census? And Trump had a movement going prior to during his first term to change the way we count the census. And I think it would have had he been successful, we wouldn't have an additional 18 million illegal aliens here. We'll get to that when we return. I'm Shannon Brick, along with Anna Hummel and Dan Broski, in for Kale & Company, 1210 WPHT.
Hey guys, Fly on the Wall is back for another season. That's right, on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
It's Kale & Company on demand from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and the free Odyssey app.
Dad, you are a conspiracy theorist, am I right?
Yeah.
You like to dabble, right?
I think you can say that, yeah.
Do you recall, and Anna, this question is for you as well, that during the, after Biden took the Oval Office and the borders opened up and people started to flood in record numbers, mm-hmm. We can't deny it. We saw it with our very own eyes. Mm-hmm. By the thousands, just walking right across, coming on in. There was a theory going around. It was called a racist conspiracy theory that this is the replacement theory, right?
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. What are you thinking, Dan?
I thought you were saying, organized busing of migrants to the border.
That too. You're right. That's part of the problem. But the theory was, the alleged conspiracy was that Republicans and many people said, well, they just want to pad their numbers because when the census comes around and they count people, they count heads, and there are some serious political implications to that because, the census count is used to apportion House seats and determine the number of votes in the Electoral College each state has. So that was the theory. So the replacement was that the Democrats were losing Black and Hispanic voters and independents, but mainly Black and Hispanic voters in large numbers. And Democrats believed that that would continue to happen because they suck so bad. I mean, really. But they said, okay, we're going to continue to suck. We're not going to get any better. We need to suck more. We're losing voters. So in order to stay in power, to suck the life out of these of American citizens, we need to replace the Democrat voters we've lost. Let's open up the gates, let them in, and find some way to scoot them onto citizenship as soon as possible. But at least they're here and they can be counted in the census, which will give them more seats, more House seats.
Or bus them to typically red states to flip those states from red to blue.
Right. I mean, right. I mean, wherever they ended up, that state would receive, more additional House seats.
Sure.
And so the census count disproportionately benefits Democrats, large illegal alien populations, And so Trump started to end the practice back in his first term, but Biden came along, overturned the policy before it was implemented. But now, thankfully, a bunch of red state attorneys general and legislators are determined to clean it up and make sure that illegal aliens are not counted. Should they be counted?
When it comes to representation in government, no, absolutely not.
Right. I mean, they are humans, and they are, you know, wherever they are, they affect the population of where they've ended up.
You count it as a human. Now, I'll offer the counter argument.
I mean, you got to count them, though, because you got to know the true impact that they hold on our, you know, public entities, on our how much are they taking? We need to encapsulate how many exactly we have here. How else do we do that besides the census?
Yeah, but if they're in the census, they're counted as a head, as a body in that wherever they are in that district. And that it results in more representation. Had they excluded illegal aliens from 2010 census, Louisiana, Missouri, Montana, Ohio, and North Carolina all would have gained a seat in the House. California would have lost 3 seats. Texas and Florida would have each lost 1 seat. The total number of electoral college votes allotted to each state would change accordingly. And that's a big, you know, that's a big shift.
Yeah. I mean, you can count them so you know who to send back. I don't know what to tell you.
But here's the problem. Since the very first census began in 1790, we have counted not only citizens, but also just residents that in any city to determine the representation of that state. If there's a long history of it, defenders of the practice say it's fair that states should be given power and resources to represent and serve everyone within their borders, whether they're here illegally or not. I disagree with that, because representatives, elected representatives in the United States, shouldn't have to rely on illegal aliens to determine.
Yeah, you're rigging the system when you do that.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a no-brainer. I don't think it's a conspiracy theory to see what happened there, but this would have headed it off at the pass, right? If you put together the fact that in his first term, Trump wanted to end this and just count real citizens. And then it was stopped by Biden while he simultaneously opened the gates at the southern border. To me, at that point, it was clear that that was what was going on. I listened to a lot of people say that the replacement theory was a racist theory. It's so racist. It has nothing to do with race.
It's an easy way to dismiss anything is just call it racist or whatever it is, sexist, misogynist.
Right.
Yeah. But when people say that, they never say it's not true. Which is what I love. They'll be like, yeah, that's racist. I'm like, yeah, but you didn't say it wasn't true.
Yeah.
So right, that's always kind of how I judge it. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You guys want Stephen Miller on this?
Oh, I love Stephen Miller.
Yeah, he's on a Benny Johnson show talking about
there's,
it.
There's broadly construed, there are 3 immediate objectives Democrats have with respect to open borders. And those are, 1, this already happens. They're counted in the census, which means more congressional seats for states with illegal aliens and electoral college votes. California would have half of the electoral college votes it has right now, but for illegal immigration. Think about that.
Wow.
The electoral map, you know, where this automatic giant behemoth of electoral college votes is delivered to the left immediately is because of illegal immigration.
The goal here was permanent one-party rule in the United States. That was the goal. In my opinion, that's exactly. You let 20 million illegal aliens come in here. You count them in the census. You put them where you need them in order to gain your seats. And really, we could have been in a situation where Democrats would have the majority in the House. They'd have the majority of lawmakers there. And there was nothing we could really do about it as long as the Democrat was in power in the Oval Office, because they were going to take executive action to get rid of anybody. They had achieved permanent one-party rule was the goal. It failed miserably. Thank God for that. But I think we ought to keep the census citizen-centric to make sure that we take care of American citizens. Because
absolutely. I mean, you can count their heads, but you just don't use that number to contribute to the number of people for that population so that it equates into representation.
What did you say, Dan?
No, I said bingo. She was right on point. You know, I think honestly,
you can count the
heads. I think they have to be counted somehow, but just don't include them in the count.
This is how much we're getting screwed, but you don't have to count them towards representation in government.
Well, they also, the issue is are illegal aliens going to give up the ghost to a census taker at their door? Knock, knock, knock. Hello, U.S. citizen? Yes. No. You know, because they're already scared enough as it is. They're going to be tossed in a truck and hauled, you know.
Right, silence an ICE agent with the arms crossed. Are you sure?
You're right. We need an accurate number because you hear 20 million, it's only 11 million. It's only this. But, we have to understand prior to the Biden administration, there were some 15 million illegal aliens in the country already. Mm-hmm. And if he let in 20, we're talking about 35 million people. That's enough to change this country politically forever and ever and ever.
Yeah, especially if they're placed in the right spots. You know what I mean? Like, right. it matters.
Right. It does matter.
YouTube.com/@1210WPHD. Please go like, subscribe, click the bell for notifications. Arthur, absolutely ridiculous premise. Congressional representatives represent legal citizens. Illegal aliens have no rights or real privileges in our sovereign country.
Hell yeah.
Please contribute. YouTube.com/@1210WPHD.
Please do. Women return. Gen Z employees are having a rough time. The people that are hiring them are having even a rougher time. They're stuck in a weird area where Gen Z probably graduated from college remotely because of the pandemic. They'd started their first jobs remotely because of the pandemic. Now that's all over with, and they got to go to the office. And some of them are not showering. That's the least of their worries. Many San Francisco employers have had to hire etiquette coaches. Imagine that. Wait till you hear some of the stuff these employers are dealing with. It is absolutely. Remember, 12.5% of Gen Z candidates brought their mother or their father to the interview.
12.5%.
Yes. That's what we'll get to this. They brought their mom or their dad to the interview. I don't know. They went into the office with him, and they waited in the lobby.
Or just got a ride because none of them have their license.
Yeah, that could be it as well.
Yeah.
But it's bad news for their employers to the point where they've had to hire outside help to help them educate these Gen Z people who don't shower. Some of them don't change their shirt for 2 weeks at a time. Disgusting.
Wait, you're supposed to change it more frequently?
Yes. Yes, Dan. Please. Daily was preferred.
I'm glad that Shane and I are remote. We don't have to smell Dan.
We'll do it next. Hang on. I'm Shannon Rick along with Anna Hummel and Dan Borowski. In for Kale & Company, 1210 WPHT.
This is the Kale & Company podcast from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and on the free Odyssey app.
Back in 2024, Intelligent.com did a survey of 1,000 employers, right? They were shocked to discover that 12.5% of these employers reported that a Gen Z candidate that they were interviewing had brought a parent to the interview.
Oh, come on.
I mean, it is wild. That blows my mind. We're talking about people that are just out of college that brought their mom, their mommy, or their daddy to a... And think about this.
Yeah.
They could have had their mom, I need your support, pump me up for this interview and take me there. And can you wait in the car so that nobody knows my mommy brought me?
Right.
But for these employers to know that mom or dad came with them, they either had to show up in the lobby or go, I don't know. I can't imagine them walking into an interview with their kid, but that's just indicative of this Gen Z problem here. Now employers are complaining that, they have a hard time, these Gen Zers, getting along in the office. They have no work. They're always concerned about work-life balance, you know?
Yes.
I've heard employers say, there's a couple of things that'll get you not hired in my company, no matter how qualified you are. If you ask me in an interview about work-life balance, you're not getting hired. Not happening.
Yeah.
So they're finding out that, it appears to be a common theme. They show up to work. They don't ask or request things of their bosses. They demand them. It's really awkward because think about it. If you graduated from college and you spent your last year remote, working remotely, And and then you got a job and it worked remotely. And now everyone's like, you got to get back to the office. They report things like one employee recently hired left food wrappers scattered all over the communal lunch table, just assuming that the janitors would clean it up. Indicative of the spoiled kid that leaves his plate at the dinner table and expects mom to come get it. So they've had to hire people like Rosalinda Randall, a etiquette coach, who says that her inquiries are up 50% over the last 2 months, mainly coming from tech campus managers in California and San Francisco, winery executives, country clubs. The same variation of the complaint. Gen Z employees treat the office like an extension of their home. They show up to work in sweatpants. Or hot girl, the siren of the office.
Yoga
pants, low-cut bustier.
With a scrunch butt, yeah.
This woman charges $2,500 for a 90-minute workshop for employees covering everything on how to make eye contact with somebody you're talking to. Yeah. Or where to stick your name tag if you wear a name tag. And always ask, not demand things from your boss. One Bay Firm tech firm asked her to address personal hygiene because, quote, two new hires did not shower or change their shirts for weeks.
Why?
Weeks.
Shannon, I'm not trying to point the finger at you and your people, but do you think that
my people?
Listen, who are the parents of Gen X? Isn't it, of Gen Z? It's Gen X, right?
Kids are not Gen Z. They're way too old to be
Gen Z. Millennials?
They're closer to the millennials, but they all have work. They all have work ethic, and they shower regularly.
No, I'm not blaming you personally, but I feel like maybe the younger Gen Xers have their children are the Gen Z. So what went wrong? Why did parents stop parenting? Why do we have to have etiquette coaches come and tell their children to shower?
I want to say to Anna, how much does she love that as a millennial, just finally the heat's off of us?
Yes. Fellow millennial.
Now you can join in and complain about the young kids today, right?
Reddit has a whole subreddit dedicated to r/anti-work. One of the top posts right now, headline, never give your job 100% ever. Subtitle or topic says, I just want to vent, but this is most important life lessons for you. In all caps, never give your job your 100%. They do not care about you. Work at your own pace, improve your people skills so that you can mug the management. Use projects to upskill yourself. Make excuses. Take that mental health day off. Don't produce the perfect output every time. Always remember, no matter what you do, they don't care about you, and you are certainly not their family. 2,000 upvotes there. Top comment, no, you can give them 100%. Just give them 20% every day for 5 days.
Wow.
Second highest upvoted, give them 65 to 75%, but optics do matter. Make sure you hype yourself. Do the easiest of extra you can, and you can do 70% and have your boss think you gave 110%. The only thing that matters is that they think you do. If you can give 100% and they don't see it, they think you're a slacker stealing time. Goes on to explain how they get around it and try to, give the optics of giving 110%.
I don't know where this world. What happened to work ethic?
I know.
In this country, it has just dissolved. This story mentions that even hospital managers have called etiquette coaches because newly hired nurses, straight out of nursing school, they show signs of apathy and entitlement. They say most of them bristle over because they have to do dirty jobs like bedpan duty, which I mean, pretty much.
Oh no, you're a nurse,
right? You're a nurse. Right. It's mainly blood and feces to the whole thing. It's about a whole nurse program, and so they believe that since they don't like doing bedpan duty, that they shouldn't have to do it.
Yeah, there is this sentiment where you have to be, at least among the younger people, not my people, the younger people, that you should be living your best life in every moment. Every day should be the best day ever. And that's just not realistic.
It never works.
Some
really
days
hard.
Are gonna suck. Yeah, so
when we return, we'll get to a new play. It's Madonna's favorite off-Broadway play. It has to do with Prince George, Williams, and Kate's kid, the 11-year-old. It's a fictionalized future about him being gay and doing drugs.
Oh, God.
Hang on. I'm Shannon Burke, in for Kale & Company, 1210 WPHD.
Start your day with Kale & Company, weekday mornings 6 till 10, on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD and the free Odyssey app.
I'm Tobin Heath.
And I'm Kristen Press.
We're World Cup champions, Olympians, and the hosts of The Recap Show. Week in and week out, we sit down with sports legends, cultural icons, and global changemakers to talk everything from clutch games to causes that matter. This is about creating the future of women's sports, a future that's honest, inclusive, and real. Join us for our reimagined journey. Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.